Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, and welcome to another Friday night's edition of Let's Talk Fort Worth. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. Thank you for joining us for what should be another very interesting show. A reminder, we do not own the rights to the music you just heard. Also, please click tag and share. Tell someone Let's Talk Fort Worth is on the air. And tonight, we're playing catch up. We're covering hot topics. Those are the stories that have been in the headlines, but we were not able to cover them individually. So tonight, we got you. We're going to be talking about the things that, listen, everybody else is talking about. So tonight, we're going to be talking about, if you didn't catch it today, the City Council's retreat held at the downtown today at the City Council building. A lot to talk about with that. Also, we're going to talk about the city election scheduled for May 6, 2023. Where are the candidates, y'all? We have four races where the incumbents are unopposed. In race number two, District 2, Carlos Flores has no one in his race but him. District 3, Michael Crane, no one in the race but him. Chris Nettles in District 8, no one in the race but him. Alan Blaylock was in District 4, but after the redistricting, he's now in 10. Well, he's sitting over in 10 unopposed. Where are the candidates? We're going to talk about that tonight. We're also going to talk about the new Election Integrity Task Force that was put together by the new DA, Phil Soros, Sheriff Bill Wayburn, and the new Tarrant County Judge, Tim O'Hare. A lot to talk about with that, y'all. Also, we're going to talk about the appeals court dismissed former Fort Worth PD's chief, Joel Fitzgerald, a wrongful termination lawsuit. Very interesting. Did not see that coming. Also, we're going to talk about the fact that Fort Worth PD's misconduct claims rarely end up in payout. That is mind-blowing. When you hear the numbers, they are absolutely mind-blowing. Also, we found out this week that a community advisory board has been hand-picked by Chief Noel Noakes. We're going to see if that passes, y'all, but that does not sound like the will of the people, but we're going to talk about it tonight, y'all. And also, last but not least, the new City Hall, which they thought they were going to be moving into this year, needs an additional $50 million more to be completed. That's $50 million more additional dollars to be completed. Wow. That's what we got on the table tonight for Hot Topic. So if you're ready, let's talk what works. I see Adrian and I see Chris on the line. Good evening, y'all.
Good evening.
Good evening. You there, Chris? Okay. You there, Chris?
Yes, ma'am. I'm here.
Good evening, y'all.
I'm here.
Listen. Okay, great. Happy Friday to y'all.
Happy Friday.
Happy Friday.
It's been a heavy week.
Yeah, it has been a heavy week. The heavy news week this week, y'all. Listen, so we're going to jump right in because this is going to be 2 hours of action-packed news. First of all, you know, someone sent me a link to the city council's retreat that was held today downtown. And they called it the SWAT, which is an acronym for why am I mispronouncing that word, y'all? Like your strength, they put an S on the back of it, weaknesses, opportunities, and threat. Did y'all get a chance to listen to that today, and what were your thoughts?
I had, I'm up to the, I got through the first portion, Carrie, and I'm actually on the SWAT acronym portion. I completed the strength portion of it. Now I'm on the weaknesses portion. But I must say that first portion, like I said with you earlier, that gentleman, he was very well spoken, and I felt more, it just inspired me more as someone who's seeking office to, you know what I'm saying, to say, wow, this is a lot of what he spoke of, this current council, they lack in those areas.
I agree. Chris, what were your thoughts?
I just have to say, you know, I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem with, some M&Rs or something like that. But it's just appalling to me that at this point, after this staff and this administration of council members and mayor have been in office and now they're up for reelection, now it's just like all of a sudden it goes together. It's absurd to me. Why do we have these people? We have these people that are college graduates. I mean, and they went on their campaign talking about that they were the most qualified people and experienced and ready to do the job, mission capable. And now here we are. They're walking it back and acting like we need to go back to school. And I just have to say, there ain't time on the schedule for going back to school. You need to tap out. And you need to let somebody come in that can fulfill the job. Going to school ain't what you're paid to do.
You know what? It's funny you say that you say educated. Not only are most of them educated, but three of them are attorneys. We know that Crane, Beck, and Parker are all attorneys. And we know that Flores is an engineer. You know, so Jared has got a doctorate degree. So y'all, what we doing here? Well, what I noticed,
I think Crane is I might be wrong. I think Crane's in real estate.
But I think he's got an attorney's license too. Someone said I have to Google it.
Okay.
Yeah, somebody said he's fly with that. He's got an attorney's license too.
Okay.
So he ain't no dummy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But let me say this. I'm gonna tell you what I noticed from listening, and I listened to the whole thing, y'all. Probably until Crane made that crack at Jared and Chris, and I had to sign off after that for another reason. But I felt like you did, Adrian. I felt like it was a very informative session. Don't get me wrong, but it's kind of like the male speaker, the Ron, whatever his name is, Holyfield or something. Very articulate, very engaging. You know, he really makes you want to pay attention to what he's saying.
Yes,
he draws you in. I love that part. But what I noticed when I took notes, this is what they did, and y'all, this is what I wrote down because it really bothered me after I paid attention to it. Basically, this leadership retreat made the taxpayers pay for a retreat. Let me write it down how I put it. Basically, the taxpayers had to pay for this retreat. So they had to pay for a seminar that basically told them what the taxpayers have already been telling them every week at City Council for free. Does that make sense? So we have to pay for what we've already been telling them for free.
Because we have to pay for them to be re-educated, re-informed what it is. And
why is your phone breaking up?
He said it's a business. It should be a disconnect from the council member and the citizens. And I said, sir, I was like, sir, I want to just jump on the screen and say, sir, there's a big disconnect.
It's still breaking up.
Can you hear me?
Okay, let's see. What the heck? Now, y'all know what happens. Listen, when they start breaking up the phone lines, y'all know how that goes. Y'all know that means they don't want you to hear something. Now, you were talking fine, and then all of a sudden you start breaking up.
I was just agreeing with you, Carrie. It's like we were having to re-educate or just, like, remind them of what it is they're supposed to be doing. You know what I'm saying? And this is David Cook, longtime friends. So,
well, I didn't watch the whole thing because I'm exhausted with it. But I did. I have no problem with the guy because I think the dude as politely as possible. But he did throw some stuff out there. A lot of what he was talking to, a lot of who he was talking to were the staff. You know, I know that he made one line. He was talking a lot to the staff, talking to them about, you know, you do your job. But then he made a comment, threw some shade at the council members and mayor. And he said, and you know what? You do your job, but, you know, you can't take away, I forget how he framed it, but you can't stop the council members from doing dumb. He said something like that.
And you know what? I agree. I think what I saw was what I took from it, y'all, in the notes that I took, that the leadership needs to listen, which is something that the citizens say every week at City Council, that they're not approachable or basically they have this, I guess, grandiose type of mentality where he put special emphasis on the fact that if you have an employee that is a truth teller, who doesn't mind telling you the truth, you should respect that person because that builds trust. And so that let me know that there's leaders that we got in this city that are not approachable and they feel like they know it all and no one can tell them anything, which is, again, something we already knew. And then he said, you know, basically he was saying that you couldn't take constructive criticism. And then he told them not to micromanage things, which, you know, I didn't know they were doing anything down there like that, but I guess I have to believe him. And then he said, don't be afraid to admit when you don't know. I have seen Chris honest enough to say when they're getting ready to do a vote, and I have to pat Councilman Nettles on the shoulder for this. I've seen him on multiple occasions say, what boat are we on? Instead of just voting and going along, when they have messed up the agendas and agenda items and they've taken them out of sequence and he's confused about what are we voting on, he does say, he's the only one that I've seen honest enough to say, where are we at? And I think that takes courage because if he's confused, you know the audience is confused. And so the fact that he says, I don't know where we're at, and that was one of the things that the speaker said, if you don't know, say you don't know. And then he told them to be aware of the needs in your community, in your district, you know. And so I just saw a lot of the things that he said, even though it was nicely packaged, it was stuff that was already being said to the council. And again, they weren't listening. So the taxpayers had to pay for this retreat for them to be told something that the taxpayers been telling them every week for free.
Hey, Carrie, you know what else I observed? Like you said, they you always talk about the body language. You always ask them, when we're at the chambers, you tell us to pay attention to the council members and how they are, you know, what they're doing. I saw Beck on the phone. I saw Beck on the phone texting. I saw now Bivens was engaged. She was engaged before the second session started. The first session, Bivens was engaged. Jared was engaged. I think Blaylock was engaged. I couldn't see Crane. I think Crane just kept a straight face because I think his, you know what I said about him earlier. I think he just his way of thinking is he know it. You shouldn't be telling him nothing. Flores same way. You know you shouldn't. He was kind of doing other things. I think Nettles kept getting, he was going in and out. He was going in and out, you know. So I say, I did pay attention to that. I was paying attention to the body language to see how are they listening attentively, you know, or do they just think this is just a waste of time? And like you say, he said Ms. Bivens and Mr. Flores, they're familiar with this because Maddie Parker said, you know, Bivens and Flores, they're familiar with this. So, you know, but Bivens, she gave her undivided attention to it. Even though she'd been through it numerous times, she gave her undivided attention to it.
I agree. And I think you probably didn't catch much of the session then because Chris Nettles and Jarrett Williams left to go to the
funeral. That's the second
part, of Tatiana Jefferson.
Oh, okay. Okay.
They left. They missed a lot of it. But what happened was I saw Crane took a terrible a jab at them, if you will. He said at the end of the session, I appreciate my council members who basically, he called it, prioritized their schedules to be at this retreat because it was so important. Well, Jared and Chris are the only two that had to leave, so that was obvious.
And you know
who
what
he was referring to? Yeah.
And you know what? I'm sure it was conveyed to. I'm sure they conveyed it to the mayor. So Crane is just on one. You know, he's just on one. And I did notice their absence during the second session, but like you just cleared up what the absence was. So that's respectable. You know, that's considerate and that's respectable.
Okay.
So
you're breaking up again.
No.
What is going on?
I was saying that that's commendable and respectable on their part. I'm pretty sure they conveyed that to the mayor, but that's just Crane.
No,
Crane just wanted
to. You got some interference going on with your phone.
It's breaking up again. Can we call you from the board, maybe? I don't know what's going on. I mean, we can hear you 1 second fine, and then the next second, y'all just happen to listen when you're about to talk about topics that they don't want you to
what
talk
about.
That's better.
Yeah. Is it better?
That's much better. It's clear.
Okay, I was just saying that that's commendable. That's commendable and respectable on Williams and Nettles' part. I wasn't aware of that. I know their absence wasn't there during the second session, but you cleared that up.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, I'm pretty sure they conveyed it to the mayor. I think Crane is just. Crane just want to be. He just want to be the one. You know what I'm saying? He just want to be that one. So.
Messy. Now, you know, he didn't explain why, but he just made it obvious that those two had been absent, you know, because everybody else was present. And for him to say that without explaining why, I call that messy. That's just what that was.
Right.
Yeah, but he did that.
And I would
did you want to add it, Chris?
I would just make the quick comment that, you know, what we first started talking about is the acronym that they identified this retreat as. It's straight up what we talk about them being tone deaf and detached from the reality of, I mean, just unsensitive to, and I mean, like, okay, in a certain way, but SWAT. I'm just saying, if you got your mind in, if you got your head in the game, you look at that and you can say, hey, we got to rebrand this because this isn't a good, I mean, it just has an allusion to it that, you know, we don't need to be. But so now what do we got? Freaking the city council taking a dang seminar program from the Fort Worth POA too. I'm just saying. I mean, I'm not trying to be sensationalized it, but it's stupid to have that freaking acronym with what's going on right now.
I agree. And you know what? And the truth be told, I'd like to know how much they pay for it, because I really would love for somebody to go down to city council and give them a refresher course. But, you know, of course, we only have 3 minutes to do it. But all of that stuff, to be honest with you, has already been said. You know, what the man who was so articulate said, those things have already been stated repeatedly. And so I'm very shocked that, you know, they act like they were like new to the information. And oh my God, they were so, you know, refreshed by knowing this information. And I'm like, really, y'all? So we ain't gonna talk too much more about that, but I'm just saying, like, y'all, we paying attention. Like, it's election season. Don't be playing us like y'all trying to get it together 2 years into the game when we know y'all don't pay attention, y'all don't listen, and y'all don't do the things that y'all supposed to do on your job. But moving on. Okay,
and
y'all, listen.
Real quick, I just got the impression also, just with the timing and everything and what's happened this week and what's been going on for so long, this is the first time we got a meeting like this. But, you know, it's not funny, but it's kind of I'm going to make a satire about it, is they got freaking blasted at the meeting earlier this week by the public speakers, and Peyton really put it on, you know, there was some meltdown going on. And I just kind of got the impression when I started hearing this guy, I said, this some kind of, did they have to schedule some therapy to redirect after getting roasted?
You're when Peyton Jackson spoke at city council this last Tuesday, I understand that. Was it Maddie Parker and Gina Bivens that got up and left the room?
I think a lot of them were flabbergasted.
Well, Aiden
yeah.
was in the building. Did both of them
it
leave?
It was just Parker. Parker got up and left, but Gina, when she left out the room, you know, Gina had to occupy her seat until she came back. She had to go.
Oh,
she looked like she was about to. She looked like she was about to cry. Looked like she got up, she bent down and said something to, I think, Bivens, and walked to the back like she was flustered. And Peyton kind of paused and said, you know, but Peyton kept going in, and then she finally came out. And then, she looked like she was bothered by what Peyton was saying. Like,
and I think
like
Peyton made some references to Maddie Parker being from Hytho, Texas, which is a place where she said currently still has Klan meetings. And I think she even said something about Maddie Parker as a friend with somebody who's in the Klan. I don't know, something to that effect. Y'all have to go back and watch it for yourself. But this is what I would say to the mayor. Peyton Jackson is very intelligent. She's very articulate. But Betsy Price would have never left that dais. That we know. Betsy Price would have stood on that dais or sat on that dais and took whatever came at her. And so all of these emotional meltdowns speaks to leadership. And I'm being very sincere. If you're going to be in leadership, some of that comes with it. And if somebody is telling the truth, it's the truth. If you come from a place where they have Klan meetings, you come from a place where they have Klan meetings. If you are friends with somebody with the, you know, as a member of the Klan, if that means the truth, shame on you.
It shows a conscience of guilt.
But I'm just trying to figure out, like, what part of what she said was so, like, disturbing that you had to get up and leave. You know, because I don't, you know, y'all know, you know, I have talked about Betsy Price to no end, but I have to respect the woman because she was professional and she could hold her own. And I just don't believe that Betsy Price would have let anybody make her get up and walk out. I don't think that would have happened. So it is what it is. But if you want to see the tape, you have to go back and catch it on YouTube or the city's website last Tuesday, city council meeting. All right, y'all, let's move on. And listen, if you have a question or a comment, call in tonight at 515-605-9321. Then press 1 once connected. If anything we are saying resonates with you, give us a call tonight. Listen, so let's talk about this current election that's coming up. Why in the world is no one in these races? Why is no one in the races? Let me tell y'all how it's lining up right now so that you're clear as to where we are. In the mayor's race, Christopher Rector's name is still showing up, but I understand from him in an inbox exchange we had that he's dropping out. You got Ken Bowens, Allison Kennedy, Jennifer Castillo, and Maddie Parker. In District 2, Carlos Flores, unopposed. He's the incumbent. In District 3, Michael Crane, the incumbent, unopposed. District 4, you have Teresa Ramirez-Gonzalez, and you have Charles Lauderdorf. District 5, you have William McKinley Jackson, Geraldo Sanchez Corona, Gina Bivens, the incumbent, and Bob Willoughby. District 6, you have Italia Dela Cruz and Jared Williams, the incumbent. District 7, you have Jason Ellis, Khalid Backholm, and Macy Hill. District 8, Chris Nettles is in there all alone. He's the incumbent. District 9, you have Taylor Mundet, Jason Pena, and Elizabeth Beck. Now, what we going to say about Taylor Mundet? We ain't seen you put in your ballot paperwork yet, so we need to see you getting on the ballot. He has put in for his treasurer, but we definitely want to see him in that race. And District 10, Alan Blaylock is over there all by himself. He was, or he's currently the councilman in 4, but due to the redistricting, he's now in 10. He's over in that race all by himself. And District 11, we see Jeanette Martinez, Rick Herring, Tara Maldonado Wilson, Crystal Galvin, and Christopher Johnson. That's it, y'all. Last time it was so many people in these races, you couldn't keep up. I mean, the mayor's race had 9 or 10 people in it. District 9 had 9 or 10 people in it. And I'm just so shocked by what we're seeing. I don't know if people are intimidated or just burnt out, but this is something I'm going to say what?
Apathy.
Is that what it is?
I think it's very obvious. More and more every single day, just this week, has just blown it up to a different, a whole higher level. This is an insider game. And,
wow.
And if you come in there, I'm feeling it. You see what anybody with any kind of dissident mood, any kind of dissent, when anybody shows up with any kind of dissent or opposing a counter argument or anything about, look at what they do to Chris Kondo. I feel for him. But man, you're there. Put your chips on the table, and whatever battle you have to fight, you fight it. If you lose, you lose. You blow off whatever. But I mean, it's just like they just want to, like, it's so static. That's it.
But you know, Bob Willoughby made a good point. Where's the advertisement for that? You don't see it on the city's website. You know, when you go to the front page, you don't know an election is coming up. You don't see any billboards. You don't see anything on the freeway blinking saying, hey, get in the races. So it's almost like they don't want people to know that there's a race about to go down. But, I mean, shame on you if you're a citizen and you're not paying attention. But at the same time, you would think that there would be some type of you know, advertisement about the upcoming election. Now, this I will say, y'all, and I'm one of the most frugal people you'll ever meet in life. Seriously, I spend my coins very, very carefully. But that said, this is the first year that I see financial backing is needed for these people if we're going to have good people in these races. And this is where I came up with thinking about this particular topic. I think we need to start a serious fundraiser, and I mean huge fundraiser, for all of the candidates that have been vetted by a questionnaire that we should come up with, vet them very carefully, their background, we want to see a resume, the whole 9 yards. If they pass the vetting process, I think they should get financial support from the fundraiser. I think we got to start putting our money where our mouth is. We got to start realizing that it's hard to compete if you don't have a lot of money. Even though you might be a great candidate, you just don't have the financial backing. I think if we find people like that, this is the time that we put our money behind those people. So just like I talked about the ticket and that idea has taken off, I think we should absolutely do fundraisers, whether that's a bake sale, a car wash, or whatever we got to do, dig in our pockets, whatever, to make certain that these people have financial backing. Y'all agree with that? I'm going to get someone on the island by myself. I thought it was a good idea.
It's going to take financial means, because like you say, a lot of them able to more or less they can reach a lot more people through means of just campaign literature. You know, you don't have to put out a lot, you know, but through campaign literature, you can reach.
Your phone is ringing again. Yes, that is crazy. Man, for some reason it is breaking. I don't know why. You know, we can hear you sometimes perfectly fine.
He's gonna
call back. Okay, so yeah, and so y'all, I think you know, and again, I'm one of the most frugal people you'll ever meet. But I also am learning a lot more about politics than I ever thought I wanted to know. And in it, I realized that there's good people that choose not to run because they don't have money. And so they automatically put it out of their minds to run because they think, I can never afford that. I got my personal stuff going on, my own bills. But I think we got to realize if we can find good candidates and we vet those candidates and we find out that they are good people, we absolutely should back them financially to a degree. I'm not saying we have to put $10 million in these races. I mean, or $10,000 into these races, but at least give them the ability to have the proper signs, the proper flyers, the door knockers, you know, those types of things so that at least they can compete. Okay. Adrian came in and dropped off again. I'm not sure what the heck's going on. But you agree with that, Chris?
I do, and I see what it is, and I think a lot of it has to do with the mainstream meet, this transition that we've had, because I'm an older fella, and I think that there needs to be there should be an infrastructure like what you're saying, not necessarily mm-hmm. fundraiser, this, that, whatever, but what makes mm-hmm. it expensive is that everybody's capitalizing. There used to be businesses like you heard of DFW and all of these places. What they would do is they would host panels, they would host debates, you know. There was a process, there was an infrastructure, and there was a process. Churches, people used to invite candidates to churches to come and say their piece on a Wednesday or whatever. And mm-hmm. and now all it is, now if you're going to be a candidate, you got to rent that one fundraiser that Nettles had a couple of weeks, a month or 3 weeks ago at some country club. And you're having to get people to buy these tables and all of this and for a dinner luncheon. No, especially for local elections, there used to be an infrastructure in place to where some grassroots people could break through, you know.
I don't know. Adrian, you're running. What do you think? Or, your line is open.
I said yes. Yeah, you still would need that. Like you say, any type of financing can help set up. Like I say, for your campaign literature and what Chris is speaking to, you still would need the money for that if you're gonna rent out a venue, this, that, or the other, to host such event. You need to be able to have some people to work your campaign too. I think that's crucial. You got to have some people who have time, willing to. Dedicate time to helping you to run your campaign, because it's a daunting task, you know?
I agree. You know, if people would volunteer, as well as, let's just say, they say to all the candidates that they're going to support, okay, we're going to make sure that you have, everybody's going to get this many signs, everybody's going to get this many door knockers, and everybody's going to get this many T-shirts. And, of course, anybody, the wholesaler who's, or anybody in business who's selling these things, you're going to get a better price if you buy, you know, in bulk, you know, for several people. And so I just think that that you know, again, the ticket, picking the right candidates, and then making sure that they have the proper tools that they need to be successful. And those are things like signs, door knockers, and T-shirts. And after that, you know, I think if somebody gave me a jump start like that, I think I could make it from there. I really do. I think you give me 1,000 signs or however many I think I'm going to need, and so many T-shirts and so many door knockers, I think I could jump in the race and do pretty well. So, y'all, this just FYI, that's just something that's been on my heart. We got to do something.
Hey, Carrie, real quick, that last election, I would ask the question, what was the climate of that time? I think one thing that stuck out about that last election was the fact that Mayor – goodness gracious.
Price.
That as well, but I'm somebody as far as people wanting to – what's the name not running no more? What's the name? Bessie Price wasn't running.
She wasn't running, so that was just
that was the whole city council. That was remember when she didn't run. That was across the board. That was across the board.
Because then Ann Zeta and Brian Byrd decided they were going to run for mayor, so they relinquished their seats, and then Shingleton decided to retire. Right, and Jungus Jordan didn't really put up a fight to Jared Williams. Right. And Kelly Ellen Gray lost her seat because so many people were mad after the Tatiana Jefferson situation.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
The climate of that time, that climate was different then than it is now. But those people that ran, I would have thought that they would have, you know, just try to do it again, you know, because, I mean, you don't have nothing to lose, you know.
I think what comes to mind is the lady that was in your race that said that she was intimidated. Remember, we still don't know what happened, but she said the private investigator came to her door. Her name was Ann something. Mm-hmm. A private investigator came to her door, y'all, and whatever he said intimidated that lady enough that she never said another word. She never took her name out of the race. But she never said another word. And I think she came in third, didn't she? I think second or third. I think she came in second or third.
She didn't get on no platform, so we didn't know who she was. I didn't hear her on any platforms giving her a spiel or whatever. But like I told you, she did call out Crane regarding that. She did call him out. She called him out through email. She called him out through email and let him know she felt like he had something to do with that. But
see how they go. And so I'm just wondering if any of this intimidation kind of thing is going on, because I've heard, I can't prove it, I've heard some intimidation is going on in five. I've heard that people have been told that they run, and I don't know if it's true or not, but this is just, you know, someone told me this firsthand, that they were told that if they ran, that something from their past would be brought up. And if that's the case, that's not right. That's just not right. And, that part is just not right. So I'm not sure if that's what's going on with some of these people not getting in these races, but I just find that very, very strange, very strange. But, y'all, we moving on. We're going to talk about this. We're just going to segue right over into the fact that there is a new election integrity task force that has been put together by the new DA, Phil Soros, Sheriff Bill Wayburn, and the new Tarrant County judge, Judge Tim O'Hare. Now, that is very interesting, y'all. They say they're dedicating existing resources. They're not asking for money to do this. They're dedicating existing resources to sustain initiatives to investigate and punish voter fraud. They say they want to investigate and prosecute individuals perpetrating voter fraud within Tarrant County. They're saying that they will prosecute illegal activities that threaten the integrity of our election. So, wonder where all that came from. Just saying. That's interesting.
We know where it came from. The whole thing started with that whole episode that Gentry Cotton, Fort Worth police officer, during his on-duty hours with his on-duty body camera stirred up a bunch of hype that was unfounded. I mean, Sheriff, what's his name? They even said what they were trying to do. They got Wayborn involved in it, and he said, well, I can't investigate it because I'm conflict of – and I'm like, well, if it was legit, it was legit. Right? If there's a legitimate found – if there's found facts that provide foundation for an investigation to occur, you don't just – as the then you sit there. There's a process for a third party. You can hire a pro tem to do the investigation. That's it happens every day. But all I'm saying was if they knew there was nothing to it and they knew that it was just drama, it was just because it was bad. You know, there was some stuff going on with there was a lot of stuff going on during that election, a few little episodes of people snapping at each other, at pulling signs up and stuff like that, and for Mondick's election, you know. And anyway, all I'm saying is it's just of all the things that we have, all of the problems that we have going on with the DA's office, with the county commissioner's office, it's another thing of optics. So you get so one day during the week you sign up that the county administrators get together and they decide they want to buy an armored truck, right? And then 2 days later they come out and they say, we're going to start up a KGB organization for election fraud. It is what it is. I mean, I know that my words, this is what history is. This is in the book.
Let me jump in. Now, I want to disagree with you because I know of some stories, and I won't bring them all up now because I've covered some on past shows, but there was some voter harvesting and some voter intimidation stuff going on, and there was some illegal cheating stuff going on. Now, in my opinion, if you are a newbie, let's just say I decide to run in District 11, and if I'm going to be honest with you, if somebody don't jump in there real fast, I just might. Because they said they were going to, but they haven't. And I would have been in 8 had Chris Nettles not switched up the redistricting. But now that I'm in 11 and I don't like what's going on downtown, if I don't see a lot of movement in 11 real quick, I'm going to jump in that race. Just putting it out there. But that said, I would be a newbie to the whole process. And there's a whole lot going on with these elections where there's some cheating going on. I can't figure out how they're doing it. But there's some voter harvesting going on or has gone on in the past. And I think if it happens again for all these people that are new who don't understand what's going on, I think they have every right to call this hotline at 817-884-1213 and tell on them. Now, I do. I don't feel like none of those seats belong to anybody. Those are elected positions. When your time is up, it's time for you to go. You should not be cheating to stay in seats. Now, that's just the truth. And so if you do and you get caught and you go to jail, good riddance. But I just feel like I cannot say that this process is a bad process because there's some cheating that's been going on in Tarrant County. You know, that's the truth. And so despite how it got
What's the one where we use the acronym every week here, the Fort Worth POA? Now, it's not actual, like, ballot box stuff here, but you can't tell me that the Fort Worth POA that's campaign finance. It all ties into the same thing. So why are we just focusing on this ballot box integrity thing? All this is just going to get – I don't like it because it doesn't seem thought out. It doesn't seem – and you've got partisanship, you know. There are laws. There are laws, and the federal laws cover, you know, that kind of corruption for an election. Even if it's a city election, it's called like the there's all kinds of laws that can – and so why do we have to have a DA, a county commission, all three new – Wayborn's not new, but you got two new guys – and they all didn't want to be like, oh, and I submit to you that it's this, what the establishment is, Republican and Democrat both, they're not fighting against what they don't want is is anomalous stuff, like not anomalous like in nefarious, but they don't want outsiders coming in. So, you know, you talk about you running and everything, that's going to be, if there's a threat, it's just like, who was the whole Gentry Cotton thing about? It was about the one candidate that was the closest Democratic threat to an incumbent, Peoples. Who was she running against? Betsy Price?
And I'm going to put this out there.
Yeah, I'm just.
I was like, where did that come from? Well, I hit that by mistake. That was interesting. But I'm going to say this. And I have not been a big Deborah Peoples fan. And I'm going to be clear about why. Deborah Peoples was booked for my show and confirmed 3 times for one particular show and did not show up. And I don't respect when you do that. However, in the climate of Fort Worth right now, I would even welcome Deborah Peoples into the race to run for mayor. I really do, because I think we need a change. I do. I think we need a change. And I say that humbly because, y'all, I think sometimes we have to put differences aside and pick the lesser two evils sometimes. And right now we're in trouble because I think Maddie Parker is out of touch with reality in a lot of ways. And I'm saying this, and it, trust me, this is not mean-spirited. I feel this in my gut. I just don't feel like she's in touch. I think she's very high sprung, and when she gets mad, I think she retaliates. I think she doesn't use a lot of wisdom in her leadership. And I think that's not wise. I think as a leader, you have to always, you know, be a leader like you're playing chess. You don't just make sudden moves. I think and a lot of the things that she's doing long term, they're going to hurt the city. And so I think the fact that she doesn't have wise counsel around her, even if you got all yes people around you, you got the wrong crew. If nobody is able to touch you and say, listen, you are making a fool of yourself, or you look ridiculous today, or what you said was crazy. If nobody in your circle can tell you that, you got the wrong circle, because what you have with you is yes people who will yes you right off a cliff. I always want people around me who can always touch me and say, Carrie, I don't know what you're doing, but you look foolish today, because those are the people you know who really care. Not those people who are around you who basically are just there to get what they can get, but they're not in position to help you. They're vultures, they're leeches. And I think there can't be anybody in her circle right now who's telling her the truth. I mean, seriously.
Let me ask you a question, Kit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to cut you off. Does the county judgeship, does it weigh more than the mayor? I know who has more.
Yeah. I think they're equal in terms of the mayor is like the mayor of the city, and the county mayor is over the county. So he handles county business and she handles city business.
I'll explain to you the two most powerful people in the county over the mayor. The mayor only has a vote if there's a tiebreaker on city for city. I'm just saying, the mayor has the bully pulpit, you know, and that's what she uses. But she really has no ordinance or statutory power to over city council. But the mayor's the thing about the county judge, the two most powerful positions in Texas politics are in the county, and that's the district attorney and the county judge. Those two people, the county judge, they have more power than the governor.
And the sheriff, too. The sheriff is very powerful.
Right. He's an elected, but I'm just saying the sheriff, yeah. I haven't really – they do have some power, but it's the county judge, and the district attorney is technically anything that has to do with
Okay, I didn't.
He cut out.
You cut out. I thought it was my phone. What did you say, Chris? You cut out.
I said it's a hypothetical, but it kind of works like this. If Phil Soros got implicated for murder and investigated for murder and indicted, okay, theoretically, he would have to, on his own cognition, recuse himself and let somebody take that prosecution. If he doesn't, it's just like when the Texas Rangers come in and they investigate public corruption in Tarrant County. If they caught Maddie Parker embezzling and the Texas Rangers came in and they investigated, they would take the indictment to the district attorney and they would give their report to the district attorney and then the grand jury and all. But the district attorney can – it's just like what we saw. I mean, what they do a lot of times, just like they didn't advocate. They don't – the district attorney doesn't advocate for prosecutions against police officers. What happens is it's an independent grand jury investigation. They call the attorney in to present the evidence that they ask for, right? Just as a formality, they ask for this, and then the district attorney gives it to them. Then they return an indictment, like they did with Aaron Dean. Now what happens? But the district attorney can half step it, you know. And so when they get an indictment, then the district attorney has to take it to court, but they can decide to half-step the prosecution. And that's what happened with Courtney Johnson. They freaking get a mistrial. They walk it over the cliff, and then there's an appeal issue. That's how it works. The district attorney is more powerful than the county judge.
But I'm just saying, but the three of them together – have all the law enforcement authority they need to take anybody out who they find guilty of these charges, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
And the county judge, like for COVID and stuff, the county judge was the one that he set the emergency.
Okay,
remember when they had Ebola over in Dallas?
Right.
That county judge pretty much took over the city and everything, for as far as that matter is concerned. Like the
Clay Jenkins, Dallas County Judge Clay Jenkins, right?
Yeah.
But let me speak to the task force that they created. I'm gonna say this: people have to stop being so reactive and start becoming proactive. We got too many people who are reactive. Their emotions, they had emotions tied into everything. Oh, here they go with this voter suppression. Here they go. Listen here. They've been changed the laws requiring how we vote. If you don't have a license, if you don't have an ID, get one. Help people get registered to vote. Educate people on what they can and cannot do. That's how you incorporate yourself within these changes. But complaining about it, thinking they're going, oh, because they voted suppression us again, it's not going to stop anything. Just adapt to the change.
Can I piggyback off that? Yo, you know what? A lot of people, and I have gone, and I've heard those same things, and a lot of people will say, well, you know what? They're making it hard for elderly people to vote, and you know, because they ask them for ID they don't have. The truth be told, y'all, an elderly person has to have a certain amount of IDs in order to get services from the state. You know what I'm saying? You can't go get your Social Security unless you can prove who you are. You can't go to the hospital unless you can tell them or give them something that shows who you are. You know what I'm saying? So what we're fighting against is really it's really irrelevant. I mean, because the truth be told, everybody's had to have some form of ID in order to exist in this country, period. You can't get an apartment unless you can prove who you are. You know what I'm saying? You can't go to the hospital unless they can tell who you are. You can't go to jail unless they fingerprint you and determine who you are. So what we're saying really doesn't make any sense. Like you said, these laws are already on the books.
And Carrie, can I ask a question? I'm not gonna stay on this. That last incident that nothing else has come of it regarding Deborah Peoples, could that be something that's keeping her out? You know what I'm saying? Because could that be something that's keeping her out? Because like you said, if she got in the race, it will shake up the race. But regardless,
I think the timing on this thing is suspect. I mean, but it is what it is. It was needed, absolutely. But you know, I do. Some people felt like it was to intimidate her. I don't know, but I just feel like, you know, I don't know. It could be not. I don't know. The timing is suspicious,
right.
But yeah.
That's just a question. I'm like it could be not. But it's just something to, you know, to ponder. You know.
Absolutely. Y'all, let's move on because the time is winding up. Let's talk about the fact that the appeal court dismissed former Fort Worth PD Chief Joel Fitzgerald's wrongful termination lawsuit. Did that surprise y'all? Because he surprised me. I thought he was like, you know how you go to Vegas and you're just on a roll? I thought he was on a roll. And then all of a sudden this happened. So some people say they felt like the judge was paid off. I don't know. Do y'all feel like the judge was paid off?
No, because the same appeals court judge had that it's Fort Worth, the obstructed. It's like what attorney Leon was telling us about how voracious the Fort Worth legal team is about obstructing any kind of litigation against the city, you know. And here's the thing. What I noticed, but there's four counts. I think there's more. He came with like six claims on his lawsuit.
Let me lay it out what they said. An appeals court has overturned a trial judge's decision and dismissed the wrongful termination suit brought against the city of Fort Worth by former Fort Worth PD Chief Joel Fitzgerald. It says Fitzgerald was fired in 2019 after 4 years on the job. He claimed that he was fired because he disclosed illegal practices by the Fort Worth administration involving access to an FBI system computer. A trial court judge refused to dismiss the lawsuit, but the appeal court says the trial judge had no jurisdiction over the case and dismissed the claim. So they're saying following this ruling, Fitzgerald still has the option of appealing to a Texas Supreme Court. So that's where we are.
Here's where it is. That decision from the appeal, this recent decision for the appeals court, it has to do with 3 and 4. And those were the wrongful termination tort claims. But what happens is those claims were redundant. So he can appeal those to this. He can appeal those two aspects, but there's still, I believe that there's still the Whistleblower Act, and that was the bedrock. That was the bedrock of his claim, which the Whistleblower Act still incorporates wrongful termination, but nothing what I read in that decision negates anything that's whistleblower, and then I forget what I don't have my mind straight on it, but the other aspects of what, the other two counts of his other two claims that he had in that lawsuit, but the Whistleblower Act.
Well, let me ask you a question. A lot of people say Texas is a right to work state, which is that how it's worded? Right to work, where they can terminate you if they want to without reason. Isn't that what they call the state?
Yeah, that's right.
Hold on. I get it though. Hold on. Let me get this.
I think it's right to work state, which means, from what I understand, they can terminate you without reason. They can just say today, this is your last day. Collect your things and go home now. And you have no recourse, is what I understand can happen to you.
At will. An employment at will state. It's at will. At will, yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. And that means what?
That means they can terminate you if you go to the restroom, they can terminate you just for going to the restroom. Blow your nose. You can just blow your nose too loud. We're gonna terminate you. You know, it just.
So with that then, could he say a wrongful lawsuit in a state like Texas then?
Let me explain.
A wrongful termination.
The wrongful termination has to do with the right to work provision of the law, and what the reason why that he did that was because he was trying to exploit the civil, exploit in a bad way, but he was trying to catch some traction on civil service protection, that he had a right of due process under the Civil Service Act to to write his name. And there was a lot of oh, that's what it was. So he still has the Whistleblower Act and the defamation claims. Okay? They talked about that in the but the only two counts, the only counts that he that they dismissed 3 and 4, which were having to do with wrongful termination and his right to property value, his right to the position or something like that. But that doesn't negate the fact that he has facts, that he has merit to proceed on the Whistleblower Act, because the Whistleblower Act is sort of the same. He was kind of – I think it was kind of dumb for him to go with wrongful termination to begin with, but the Whistleblower Act wasn't incorporated in anything that they're saying, because he's already gotten decisions all the way at the Supreme Court. This same court, that's what they tried to appeal. They tried to get dismissed first was the Whistleblower Act and stuff like that. It went to the same appeals court, and they sustained him, and then the city of Fort Worth appealed it to the Texas Supreme Court, and the Texas Supreme Court said, we don't even want to hear it. You're wrong. So he still got that other appeal that he won. So there's still, in my interpretation, the lawsuit is still active, because if it wasn't active and he was out of the game, then he would be busting a scene right now.
And Carrie, forgive me. I don't want to sound comical, because I know we take things serious around here. So let me get a precise. It says, what is the termination policy in Texas? In Texas, at will employees can be terminated at any time for any reason, as long as it's not an illegal reason, if it is in the best interest of the employer. So I didn't want to make it sound comical, because I'm trying, you know, we trying to put out information. So forgive me if I was being I didn't want to, but that's what it states.
Really? But you know what? In my opinion, someone said this to me, y'all, and I'm just going to repeat it, and he happened to be listening, or y'all share this with him, then, you know, y'all share it with him. But this is what somebody said to me. It says, Carrie, if Fitzgerald was smart, he dropped the lawsuit and run for mayor. I said, what? And so, you know, that was my thought. I even posted it on the Left Out Fort Worth Facebook pages. And is he running for mayor? Because that would throw this whole race into a tailspin. I mean, you're talking about an exciting race. That would be an absolutely exciting race. I mean, because right now the race looks very boring. All the races look very boring at the Troopy Dome. And that was really, they just look boring. But that would bring a little excitement to this upcoming election. People would get out and vote there. I guarantee you people would come out to the poll.
Knowing what I know about the story, I would not ever ask him to do that, because they did him wrong every which way. Like, you can say whatever, the, you know, he there's some things about his personal, and they were saying, but they brought him in, and it was the Fort Worth POA was pissed the fuck off. Excuse my language. The Fort Worth POA was mad right from the start, because David Cook, and they brought in an outsider. The reason that they brought in an outsider was because they were in trouble because of Salinas and Halstead got them under consent decree, because they got sued by the black off police off some other black police officers before Fitzgerald came in. So they were under on administrative matters. It wasn't the law enforcement matters. It wasn't like beatings and stuff like they had a civil rights lawsuit that the city got in trouble for, and there was an injunction, and they got put under consent decree. And so that was what put the Fort Worth POA on their heels. And so what David Cook did was he got a plan together, and he said, well, we're going to do this thing. And they got Fitzgerald to come in here, right? And it was set up. It was scripted from the beginning. They were going to flush him out right from the start. And that's what they did.
Let me say this. The day he was terminated, though, wasn't he supposed to meet the FBI like at 3 o'clock, and they called him in and terminated him at 2:30?
Yes.
So
that's where
it seemed like it was more about that FBI than yesterday.
Yeah, and there's more to it. There's a lot more. There's a lot to this story, and he got defamed because on one they had the Fort Worth POA, Manny Ramirez and Carolyn Gilmore. I've seen the script. I've sent it out. I think I sent it to you. There's a transcript of these meetings that the Baltimore Police Department was when they were trying to get him out before they totally like screwed him over. They went to the interview and they were David Cook, Betsy Price, all of them. They were like singing his praises, talking about and he literally was. If you look at the statistics, the empirical statistics on crime in Fort Worth, there was a report that came out, and you can look at the bar graph of the crime rate in Fort Worth, and there was a gradual decline with the population increase, and it was a gradual decline since 2010, right? And then you get to 2015, and it drops dramatically, like, there's a big curve. The crime rate goes down for like until 2019 when he got fired, right?
Mm.
And in 2019, when Krause took over, now we've got the steepest increase in the last 20 years in the crime rate over the last 4 years, 4 or 5 years. And they don't even show what Neil Noakes is because they don't have the last 2 years, but I'm sure that it's turned up higher than what it was under Krause.
That was not
so
funny, but anyway,
it's right there.
Okay.
You can't deny it.
Yeah, I did see the report. And I don't remember the details of it, but I do believe, you know, they did him wrong. I do believe that, and so we shall see what happens. But you know, the fact that you know he still does have options is interesting. But if he ran for mayor, that would be like how you like me now, because I would put my lawsuit on pause, run for mayor, and if I won, then maybe I'll put the lawsuit, you know, in the closet, and if I didn't win, I would keep my lawsuit going. That part. Because we need some excitement in these races, y'all. It's just what it is. Say what, Adrian?
No, I said that's good. I'm saying that's good. Yeah, that's good.
We need to do something. Yeah, we're going to move on to the fact that the Fort Worth Police Department's misconduct claims rarely end up in payout. Now, y'all, this was shocking, very disturbing, and it borderlines on demonic and evil because it's literally saying that, you know, their policy is, I mean, it's just, it's cruel as a grave. And basically, this is how it goes. The City of Fort Worth has paid $480,000 since 2017 on police liability claims. More than a quarter of that came from a single case. Okay, so that was Jackie Craig. These claims range from allegations of police brutality to enforcement of ordinances that residents argue are unconstitutional. Since 2017, now this is 2017, y'all. How many years ago is that? 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 20, that's 6 years. So since 2017, 164 cases of police brutality claims have been filed. And of those, 54 resulted in the city paying out. Now that's 164, but they only took care of 54. The majority of police brutality claims in Fort Worth pay out somewhere between $0 to $1,000, but few end up costing the city tens of thousands of dollars each year. In 2016, Jackie Craig resulted in that he ended up paying out $150,000 in a settlement, and that was just this year. So remember, that was 2016, and she just got the payout this year. Fort Worth as a whole, they say, pay out far less for liability claims compared with neighboring Dallas. From 2012 to 2017, Dallas spent $10.8 million to settle law enforcement lawsuits. Fort Worth spent $2.2 million from 2009 to 2019. Okay, and that was in the Michael Jacobs case, if y'all remember, and I think he got $2 million. So that ought to show y'all something's wrong. Now, this is how they get away with it. The city has no liability. They said basically they defend the cases strongly by saying that the city has no liability. This has led to fewer settlements and more dismissals in favor of the city. Now, how are you going to have no liability if your officers are wrong? It goes on to say the city primarily is self-insured, which means that instead of paying a third-party insurance provider, Fort Worth sets aside money in a fund for liability costs. File claims are handled internally by a licensed claim adjuster. In a self-insurance system, the entity itself takes on the risk involved rather than transferring it to an insurance company. So y'all are bullies. Y'all are bullies. Y'all really, in my opinion, take no responsibility, even when you know the officer is wrong, and then you strong-arm the people and don't pay out. That is demonic. And I'm going to put it on record, Fort Worth going to pay for that. Your sins will revisit you. That's evil. If you know your officers are rogue and you have been told this over and over again, you do nothing about it, they kill somebody, and then you say you have no liability, that's evil. That's just that's evil.
I got that's the evil. Other example, too. The other example, too, if you remember the court, we talked about Courtney Johnson shooting Gregory Adams with the shotgun, if you remember that story. It was and he got indicted for aggravate and tried, and after while that lawsuit was going on, for some reason I don't know, but the family settled for $200,000, and the guy shot him, jacked up his arm, he was already disabled, right? Jacked up his arm, and he had to go to the home for the rest of his life, where he died a couple of years later. And the family got $200,000. That's nothing.
But see, that's like a bully. And trust me, y'all, every bully meets his match. And I think it's shameful that this city does that. Say what, Adrian?
Karen, I think, you know what, that speaks to the policies that they have on the books right now. That's why they're so brash with thumbing their noses up at us trying to. They thumb their noses up at the Race and Culture Task Force. Kim Neal, you know why she left. She realized these, like you said, they're evil. She said, we got a problem here. She couldn't. Kim Neal, man, look at her. She's like the chief in Dallas when they ran her out, tried to run, they ran her out. She was making changes. They ran her out. The devil don't like change. Evil doesn't like light. Evil doesn't like light. The Race and Culture Task Force, Kim Neal, that independent report came out. None of that wasn't the death of Mr. Tatiana Jefferson, the wrongful the death of the young man you started your beginnings with, Mr. Thomas. It's what they have on the books, and the fact that Maddie Parker is now doing media. You're doing media runs. Talking about policing, talking about, you know what I'm saying? I read the interview, and I thought about that moment of emotion. Remember, that was her birthday night. She didn't give a damn about that vote. That was her birthday night. She was more concerned. She was more concerned about her birthday. If Miss Jefferson would have been my, it wouldn't have happened. They probably wouldn't have showed up to your neighborhood. But yeah, it's the policies on the books. That's why they do what they do. But we're gonna have an 11 seat council panel now. My question is, what are these new council members going to do? Are they going to just get in line and just just walk the fine line, or are they going to challenge? You know what I'm saying? Challenge the narrative. You know.
Maddie Parker said today, if y'all go back and finish the retreat, she said today, y'all, we're going to redo this. We're going to have a part two, in essence. And she said, as though all of them are coming back, she said. And we're going to have a part two. And then somebody reminded her there's going to be two more seats. And she said, oh, yeah, and the new council people. So they all assume they're coming back. You know, so that's going to be very interesting. Because I think, in my opinion, Tatiana Jefferson's death and the fact that Aaron Dean's defense was it was all about his training, and the city has this whole thing about they have no liability. Where will this land these claims, if that makes sense? Because if we're gonna do it like that, we need to rewrite these policy books for dummies. Because if it's all about the training and these people are killing people because they follow their policies and procedures, let's write policies and procedures for dummies then. But let's not say you don't have no liability when people are telling you you got rogue cops on the street who are doing way too much, and people are calling y'all out on it. And I say something that someone mentioned this week, and I'm going to say this. Every time an officer gets out of line, file a complaint on his or her behind. That's the only way that there's going to be documentation when these reviews and things like that and these committees come through and the feds or whoever comes in here, that there's documentation that these people have a repeated history. That's the only way you keep a bad cop from getting a promotion. That's the only way that you can line up a bad cop to get fired. When you put enough paper out there and that story hits the news, they got to let him go. And so I think that's what we got to stop being intimidated by the process. That's the only way that we can get bad cops off the street, even though IED is not going to do a cotton-picking thing, but they got to stack that paper in his file to let the world know when somebody asks for his jacket just how many complaints he has in there. And I think that's the thing we got to stop. I found out from IED when I filed on Officer Chavez, he lied on 3 different police reports. But the IED lady told me it doesn't matter that he lied. These are her exact words. It doesn't matter that he lied. He didn't break any city policy. Well, I'd be damned if we don't have a problem with city policy if an officer falsifying a police report isn't breaking city policy. So
that's considered an official document.
I gave them undeniable proof that he lied on all 3 reports, and she came back and said after we went back and forth, because she said she didn't find any wrongdoing, and she says, well, he may have lied, but he didn't break any city policy. So we got the wrong people running City Hall when it's okay for an officer to falsify a police report, and then Mayor Pro Tem Gina Bivens gets people like Cindy Boland and Dan Hawes to write him a letter of recommendation so that they don't get in trouble. So we got the wrong people at City Hall. It's just what it is. And so it's our job on May 6th to get out and vote these people out, but it's also our job to support the people who are running against them. That's my belief, y'all. My soapbox.
We have gotten a lot of things wrong, you know, here in the past, you know, I don't mean that in a bad way. You know how we try to make, you know, we make our little predictions because we, it's all right. But you know what? We got until the 17th. I know right now it doesn't look like those, nobody jumped, you know, it looked like what it looked. But you know what? Lately we've been getting surprised by the outcome of things. So I'm going to hold out to 5 o'clock p.m. to see if these other races get some people jumping in them. You know what I'm saying?
And you think people are last minute people?
What are incumbents? I mean, mainly the races where the incumbents are not running unopposed right now. Those are the races I'm more or less looking at, the ones where the incumbents are running unopposed.
That's 4 races.
Two, three, eight, and ten.
I'm going to say one more thing, y'all, about this not paying out on these claims. We got them giving 600 and some odd thousand in CCPD funding to people, but you don't want to pay out when you know that the officer has done wrong. That's evil at its highest level. That's evil. You're giving $600,000 to people who don't even have a track record just because they have a nonprofit. People who have nonprofits that have no connection to law enforcement whatsoever, but y'all gave them money. But at the same time, people who have legitimate claims that the officers have, you know, committed crimes, police brutality, the whole 9 yards, and y'all don't pay out, shame on Fort Worth. And the leadership needs to go. If they condone that, first of all, I think the city policy needs to be changed. I think the city needs to carry insurance. I think if they're not paying out because they're self-insuring themselves, I think that needs to be changed.
Yeah.
I think we run in the wrong kind of city.
And here's the thing that here's the thing that burns up the brakes of my righteous rage, okay? we had Aaron Dean case all of these 3 years that was going on. And, you know, I know the city came, they came to the dice and they listened to the people and everything like that. But I'm just telling you, look at the optics. Go back and look at the record if you remember, and let's do a comparison. Let's do a comparison on what was effective, on the engagement of the city council members, right, how they were tuned in and focused on what was being said and what was being discussed, and they were in cohesion about resolution and meaningful, productive conversation. Okay, mm-hmm. You got none of that with the whole Aaron Dean thing. It was just controversy. Friction and then a lot of BS. You know, people were bringing it up and they were just like done with it. You know, mm-hmm. But what happened about the freaking curfew? We had four meetings over that freaking curfew, right?
Yeah, we did.
And it was already at the final phase of it, they already said the state going to override it, but they had police officers coming in there with books and captains and lieutenants coming with some speeches and they had some backup citizens. And if you looked at the dice, that last meeting that I saw over that, whenever they delayed it till anyway, you had all of those, who was it, Jared? You had Flores just all over his computer talking about the statistical analysis of these tickets, and they knew everything about the curfew, the criminal curfew, you know, every statistic that would apply to support the curfew to be extended and everything like that. But where was that engaged? Why weren't they all up on their mouse clicking through statistics on the internal affairs reports and statistics? They weren't asking for no dang statistics and facts on that shit. But over a damn curfew? They're gonna try to turn the soil.
Can I tell you? And Maddie Parker alluded to it today at the retreat when she said, "Teen violence or something like that is up." This is what I believe about the curfew. No data to prove it, and I'm going to explain why. I think they're fudging the numbers on the crime in Fort Worth because they want people to keep coming here thinking it's Mayberry. So. I think teen violence is worse, and Jesse Taylor, who was supposed to be running in 11, deals a lot with teen violence. And he said he's very good friends with Judge Kim, who runs the teen court here. And he said there are far more cases of assault, attempted murder, and murder from teens in Fort Worth that never make the news. That was alarming to me. So what I believe is, this stuff ain't happening in the daytime. It probably is happening at night. But guess what? They're not telling you, because then that makes Fort Worth look like a place that people wouldn't want to come to live. So people are migrating here from California and Illinois and other places thinking, oh, this is this quiet community where I can raise a family and everything's like Mayberry. Well, I think if they told the true numbers, that would probably cause alarm to some people. So I think what we saw with that curfew vote was the police department coming before the council and lying about the true numbers. And so I think mm-hmm. what was happening was they kept trying to make a case without telling the whole truth. And so it really mm-hmm. just made them look stupid, because they kept trying to say, oh, it's only like 25 this year and 26 this year, when in actuality, I believe the numbers are much higher. And it's shame on them.
What they were doing, I know what they were doing. All of the statistics that the police were bringing, they were bringing in the freaking municipal court act. That was the municipal court dispositions. Okay.
Oh.
They weren't. Oh. That's what I'm sitting here saying. And that was my whole problem, was the deception that was going on there mm-hmm. wasn't the whole story. And what I'm sitting there saying is that you weren't getting the implicit bias in the statistics and everything like that. Because what I would tell you is, that if you arrest a kid with a joint in his pocket for possession, that's going to be a county case. That's a state law. Mm-hmm. That's going to be a misdemeanor charge in juvenile court or whatever. He's going to get arrested and taken to jail. Okay, the ordinance that the statistics that they were bringing up on the ordinance was the fine only infraction of breaking the curfew. That was. So So if they arrest the kid, if they have the probable cause, oh, this kid violated, they write that in their probable cause, but they aren't, they're going to send him to county, to the county system. They aren't even going to waste time writing him an infraction. So what I'm saying is there's a diversion there that they weren't calculating. If you get a kid and you're checking up on him because of a curfew violation and he's got a minor in possession or even minor in possession, you know, the Class B stuff that you can arrest them for, they don't even waste their time on writing them a ticket. They put them in handcuffs, take them because they know that they're going to make an attorney a few thousand dollars to represent, you know, the piracy part of it. They don't waste the time with getting – that's why you have so low – that's why the statistics – I agree that a curfew would be a good thing if it was enforced, you know, ethically. But what I'm sitting here saying is they abuse it. They use it as an excuse to harass kids. That's
I agree. And they just – I mean, and I think Gina Bivens called them out on it in a very, you know, humble way. She said, I just don't think the statistics support that. You know, so she knew that they were probably lying. She probably knew they were lying, but she didn't vote for it because she said, you know, the data that y'all gave me don't support it. And so they shot it down, but it was going to be shot down anyway because Austin said to shoot it down. But it was just very interesting that they were never truthful about the true crime data for teens here in Fort Worth. Y'all, we got to move on. So listen. Segueing off again to this community advisory board that has been handpicked by Chief Neil Knows. Now, he's picked 13 people out of what he wants to be a 19-member board. And allegedly, these will be their duties. They will listen and promote the community's voice in policing and public safety. They will address the needs for direct communication with and recommendations from the community. They will provide the community a greater voice to ensure fairness and equity. They also want to allegedly promote transparency and accountability from the Fort Worth Police Department. And he said the overall goal is to empower Fort Worth residents to work with the police department in a collaborative working group to further the goals of fair, just, and dignified treatment of each and every person while keeping our residents safe from crime and disorder. And allegedly, the Community Advisory Board will collaborate with the Fort Worth Police Department and the Office of Police Oversight Monitor to review policies and procedures and practices. Now, the problem I have with that is this. The Police Oversight Board, a lot of those people make They make six figures, and their job is to write policy and procedures. Their job is to allegedly look over the shoulder of the police department during their investigations. However, they have no subpoena power or authority to, you know, hand down punishment or anything like that. So that said, why would we need another committee to do what they are already well paid to do? I don't get. I mean, that's like really treating us like we're stupid. That like literally says that somebody didn't think that out very well, and they just came with some throw together idea of what they thought would work. That makes no sense to me. It doesn't.
And what are you talking? What are we talking? Why are we even? Why didn't somebody tell Neil Notes to sit down and shut up because he ain't the boss of shit? I'm just saying in a command, I don't like the fact that a police chief comes up and stands there, and that's what he did. That's what he did about the whole proposal that Kim Neal put out there. He was saying, "We will not do it. I won't have it." Like a damn baby, and he got his way. And it's just like what Adrian says: the Fort Worth POA. And they got the light switch on the city council, man. It's on or off. So I'm sitting here saying, so he comes up all of a sudden out of the blue. They want to sit there. Neil Notes was the one that they're trying to give credit for bringing it up. And what I'm saying is it's election year window dressing. It ain't going to happen. Okay. Because it's just basically what they're saying is they want to revive this other committee that was about a policy committee. you know, a policy advisory committee that was out under Halstead that went away, and they said, we just want to revise that, and I want to pick this. And I'm like, you shouldn't even – the city council should be coming to you and telling you this is what to do. You don't go to the city council and tell the city council what to do. We've spent all this money on these things, these surveys and stuff, 2-3 surveys about the racial equality, and then the last police report where they're saying, do it. This is what you need. Well, that's what they need to do. It's the wrong way.
I agree. Adrian, what are your thoughts?
It's the same thing that the race. What's the purpose? The Race and Culture Task Force presented this same format,
an even better one.
We had collective voices from all backgrounds, from all walks of life, who were interested in this process. But again, y'all feel y'all know best, and like Chris said, It's amazing how they throw a lot at us during election season. They throw a lot at us at election season. I won't be surprised
I was listening to it all. I heard Neil Noakes, and I was pissed off about Neil Noakes and everything. But here's the teller: that interview that you read with Maddie Parker about the issue the next day or the same day or whatever, she did a sit down, and she was sitting there, and what she said was, I think this is a conversation that needs to evolve. What that is to tell is that they ain't serious about shit. They want to evolve a conversation for the election year. And then as soon as they – so basically they're just saying, getting people's like, oh, okay, well, maybe we've got progress, so I won't be so upset, because we're moving towards an oversight committee. So we got this little wooden nickel, but that wooden nickel is going to get burned up as soon as they hold the seat again.
If I understand correct, there was some pushback from council members, right? Didn't some of the council members push back on this new proposal by the chief?
Yeah, Bivens, I think Gina Bivens said, how
Bivens,
dare you?
Bivens Beck and Nettles got sassy.
I think Gina Bivens said, how dare y'all do that without including us in the process? How can you do that without including us in the process?
Like you say, and they may mention that the other four remain silent, like they like it's not like we know they would. Crane, Blake, Flores, and they remain silent on the issue, you know. But we already know how their thought process is on it. But it's Chief Noakes, he needs to get called out doing council. He needs to get called out. He hasn't been back to council since the 5-4 vote against the police and community advisory. He hasn't been back.
Really?
No. Noakes hasn't showed up back to council. So that goes to show you.
It goes to show as well.
And then we got Manuel.
He was just taking up space, you know. He wanted people to he was just showing up to make people feel like he was concerned. If we see the chief, he's concerned. But once they got their vote, we haven't seen the chief.
Hmm.
But then remember he had that shooting on Barry. Somebody made what they say. They say somebody said he must have woke him up out of got him out of his den or something. You know what? He was scary. Think about this, y'all. He only did it because of the area that it happened in. He would have did that for any other area. He wouldn't have did that over in South City. He wouldn't have did that over in Eastwood. He would have did that over in the historic South Side. He only did that because of the area that it was in.
I would have sat there and said, you know what? Well, you've got these leftover names. I want to have a nomination. I want you to write me a letter, a consideration of evaluate. I want you to interview these people as honorary members of your oversight board: Zion Carr, James Smith, and Fitzgerald.
James, Zion Carr is a child, and we don't put him in that situation.
No,
Oh, you mean honorary. Okay, right. But I'm just
honorary,
saying he's got his
mother.
Remember, today they buried his mother, so he's going through a whole life.
Yeah,
his mother, she's
right.
Running,
I know, I understand.
Yeah, he's going through a lot. Let me say this, y'all. At some point, we got to stop worrying about police officer morale more than we are worried about the fact that the citizens are saying that our police department is rogue. Now, I don't know how they, you know, prioritize which is more important, but on where I'm standing, the person who pays the salary is the person who's most important. And I just, I think I get so tired every time we come to a conversation about an oversight board or a review board or a community advisory board. It always comes down to, oh, if you put something like this in place, it brings down the morale of the police officers. Well, do you know what it does to the community to be terrorized by officers who have badges and guns? You know, officers who are supposed to be protecting and serving. What we saw in Memphis, you know, we weren't surprised by what we saw because we know that happens here. And so the thing is, they just got caught. And when we pray who all the ones that do it in Fort Worth, they get caught too. But we weren't surprised that police officers beat people up and some to the point that they kill them. But we know most of them probably just shoot you today. But for whatever reason, they did what they did to Tyrese Nichols. But we don't want to hear no more about it bringing down morale because, in my opinion, if I were an officer who left my house every day to come and do a job, it would be no different than if I went to be a doctor or if I went to be a lawyer. I should go there abiding by the law. And if I abide by the law, then why should I be concerned if they want to put an advisory board together or not? That wouldn't concern me because I would think of that department as a department that would just be another arm to make sure the people that did what I did stayed on the right course. So if I leave my house every day with the right intentions, I don't know how I would be concerned about that. Just like we just talked about the voter register, I mean, the voter fraud thing. Everybody needs a driver's license to begin with or some form of ID. So if you got a problem with that, then the problem is with you. And the same with this. If you have a problem with, let me say, if you got a problem with a review board, then that says that you're waking up every day with the wrong intentions when you come to work. That's just my opinion. Something's very off with your thinking. And, you know, they said officers are leaving the profession. Well, if accountability and transparency and someone who slaps you on the wrist when you do something wrong, if that is a problem, then you shouldn't be a police officer. And if that takes us down to 10 officers, so be it. If we have 2,000 bad and only 10 good, as big as this city is, I'll take 10 good officers over 2,010 bad officers. That's just my thinking, y'all. We're gonna go to the phone.
Every time I hear Neil Noakes have a speech, he throws in that caveat. It's just seasoning, transparency and accountability. It's a buzz because he says it one time, and every time he steps up to the mic, he just says it, but he don't have any kind of concept or elaboration or effective. He's not presenting anything that's got traction to include it. And what I sit here and say is that that transparency opens the door to accountability, and then everything else we're talking about don't matter until we have those two steps out of the way. You don't have those two steps out of the way? Yeah.
I agree. If you're listening in and you have a question or a comment, the call-in number is 515-605-9321. Then press 1 once connected. We're going to 314-381. Good evening, Pianki. How are you?
You know, I still say there's nothing wrong with the police. It's the people that you run into.
No, you didn't.
In St. Louis last week, you had two police officers shot, and they was able to fire back on the person that they shot them and kill it. Another video shows police pulling the motorcycle over, police get out the car. The motorist get out of the car. He should have stayed in the car. He started approaching the police. Then he tried to take the policeman's gun.
Mm-hmm. And all that's on video?
Yes, it is. There's a newspaper on the two police officers getting shot in Baton, Missouri, right near the Solar.
Is there a video to confirm what they said happened?
Is a video confirmed that, well, yeah, they were shot. They got bullets in them.
Okay.
You can't get no more plainer than that.
No, that's
and the
not
other one were,
you know what I mean, but anyway, go ahead. Okay.
Yeah, I don't think the police officer shot themselves just to shoot another, to shoot somebody else. And the other one does show a video of the police wrestling with the suspect. And
so
he's trying to
you,
take his gun.
Let me ask you this. If Tyre Nichols had pulled out a gat and started waxing those officers that were doing that to him, would that be a problem for you?
No, he would. He should have been killed.
Oh.
See, you're looking at the end rather than the beginning. If a person, for instance, like Albury, you remember the case? You remember the video where he approached the officer, ran up the officer, and said, "What the F you put me for?" The officer was pulling the cop down. The officer could have shot him.
You couldn't out. You couldn't out. Yankee.
He could have shot him because he's running at them. He has to protect himself. I mean, I understand what you guys are. Wait a minute. You guys are making reference to what you see in Fort Worth. I kind of follow this stuff around the world, around the country. And when you got a point, when a police officer, when a police officer,
Yankee, your phone is breaking up.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that when a police officer is being threatened and about to lose, you know, a chance to lose his life, he's got to protect himself. I'm sinister also.
Okay,
so I don't
let
think
me
it's the
this.
Police. Out of all the police stops, you have a few that has these bad apples. But out of all the police stops, you have a whole lot of cases where people just act belligerent.
I don't know. I've known you for a lot of years, and we always agree to disagree these days. But this is going to be one of them. Because in my opinion, Tyre Nichols' case right now, those officers are charged with second-degree murder, kidnapping, official oppression, official misconduct. And so in my opinion, it clearly says the officers were doing something wrong that night.
You know why I come? So that the idiots don't go out there and burn down this town. Because businesses said if we go through this again, we ain't coming back like Kroger's.
No. So you are trying to tell
They always overcharge. Carrie, you know
after
that.
But after watching the video, you don't believe that they are guilty of what they were charged with.
In the end, yes, they are, but not the EMS workers. They didn't have anything to do with that. And the guy that's standing there on the side, so they overcharge.
Okay, let me tell you since you brought that up, and I wasn't going to even bring that up tonight, but let me tell you what has come out of Memphis this week concerning the EMT workers. What you heard about the EMTs were called because somebody was pepper sprayed. They did not call the EMTs for Tyre Nichols. They called the EMTs because three of the officers got pepper sprayed when the officer was pepper spraying Tyre. So when they arrived at the scene, they were only helping the officers. And then they looked over at Tyre and realized he was falling off the car. And that's when they looked over and said, oh, let's see if he's okay. And so that's when they called for him some help. So that's why they got fired, because it's their job to go and administer to whoever is in need. They did not.
Well, let me
that.
Ask you a question. Let me ask you a question. On a battlefield in the military, they go out and they help the American soldiers first, then they will go out and help the enemy. You had that in World War II. They helped the American soldiers first, then they helped the Germans. Applied medication to them.
But do you understand?
You know why that is?
So
wait a minute. You know why that is? I ain't going to let it see y'all. I mean, you do that because you want your American soldiers to be able to fire or be able to protect you in case the German soldiers become illiterate. I'm sorry, belligerent.
You're going to need it. You're going to need security when you come to the show from now on. I'm going to say this real quick, Christopher. Let me say this. First of all, Tyrese was the victim that night. He was not the enemy. And so in terms of them coming to the scene, they should have come to the scene to help. First of all, how do you prioritize someone who's pepper sprayed by someone who's basically over here beat to death? So if you are EMT and you did not know the difference of shook priority,
well,
then you shouldn't be an EMT worker.
In the end, in the beginning, all the way back to the beginning, put it in reverse. He was on the ground. If he had put his hands behind his back and been handcuffed, and even if they were beating him, he would have followed orders, then he would have had a good lawsuit then. But when he upped and run, you're talking about a whole different scenario. Yes, they should have not beat him like that, but he had beat like that, and he lost his life. But if he had got handcuffed in the beginning, and even if they had to kick him, then that would have been a charge where he could have enjoyed the money. Rather than somebody else.
Wow.
Thanks.
Wow. I'm speechless. I'm speechless. I don't know how to follow that. Pianki, thank you for your call tonight, but I can't follow that one. 682-250, good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth.
Hello.
Hello.
Malik.
Hey, Malik.
Yeah, what a Pianki do, bro? You ain't got to rush him off. Is that a brother?
No, he hung up.
Is that a brother?
Yeah, that's a brother.
Where he come from? He must want to be, you know what, he one of them dudes that's a bootleg brother, so we ain't going to entertain that type of rationale. he just one of those kind. He just an old Charlie, and he don't know no better.
Okay.
Because he act like none of his people got stopped driving while black.
Pianki comes from near Ferguson, so he absolutely knows what it's like. I don't know why Pianki pretends he doesn't. But
he's full of job on it. But, you know, sometimes they get off in these little secret so-called bourgeois or boule clubs, and they flip and act like that stuff don't go on. So, you know. That guy's, he's just an abstract. But, you know, it is what it is. You know, I tell people all the time, you know, it ain't so much of the uniform. It's your attitude.
Mm-hmm.
It's your attitude. If he did leave, you knew his name. All thing you have to do is put a warrant out and catch him on another day.
Mm-hmm.
Is that simple?
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I mean, if he running away, he's not opposing as being an imminent threat.
I've come to the conclusion on top of the ballot box thing with everything we're talking about. I've come to the conclusion, and I've really thought about it because I've never been – I'm not one of these persons to put a sticker on my window about NRA and a big old N4 and everything like that. But I got the thing. If everybody gets on the open carry, everybody who can legally possess, they need to learn the law. And if they start open carrying – because let me tell you, this is the blaring image. This is the problem we get. These police ain't acting funny on people that are armed. It's
no,
like
they
sure
don't.
You sent me that video. You sent me that.
I concur.
You sent me that video, Kerry, about those dudes doing that rap out in the hotel on the west side with their gals and everything. These cops ain't even trying to get funky with that.
No, they're not. They're not, bro.
They're not.
They're not.
They trying to get funky on somebody's goddamn bedroom window at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yep.
They scared of them, brother.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got
so what
you.
I say,
we got you.
Quick. I'll be quick and finish it. What I say is that people start to do this open carry thing, right? I'm not saying draw on them or whatever, but I'm going to sit there and say that when the cops walk up on you or tell you to get out of your car, you tell them, you know, you ain't got to tell them. Just put your hands up to your shoulders. And when they see that holster, that holstered weapon, they're going to get a little bit hesitant. They ain't going to be so buck no more. If they got to deal with, if they calculating the fact that people are carrying.
No.
I'm not pleading on violence or nothing like that, but I'm just saying something's got to give. We got to change.
Now, Kerry, I do agree with Chris, because when we out there patrolling, their attitudes are totally different.
Mm.
They're mighty nice and considerate. 9 times out of 10, they digress and go on about their business.
That's how it was 100 years ago.
I mean, Chris is telling the truth. Because if you catch him, when the Oath Keeper was running around here, or the, what's the mother boys, Proud Boys, they don't bother them.
Oh, wow.
They don't bother them at all. Chris is right. He 110% right. Because 9 times out of 10, they part of it. They ain't finna go against their brotherhood, but their attitude are different now. I agree with Chris on that.
And the other example, too, is look at what happened. You had 100 cops with Kevlar helmets, ballistic vests, top-of-the-line scope rifles, SWAT team, helicopters flying all over the top of that damn elementary school in the Uvalde. And what do? They out there pooping in their pants. While one motherfucker with an AR-15, they walk down the hall and they hear a pop, 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 and they're like, ooh.
Yo,
let me run down here and change my diaper.
Let me
stop. I agree with Chris on that. Because Governor Abney got ticked off because they lied to him. But based on what they are trained to do, they didn't do what they were trained to do.
Listen to here. And if you ever watch the beginning of that video, it's just another detail of it. That kid wrecked out in the ditch about 100 yards or more away from the school. There was a cop with an M4 scoped rifle that had him a bead on him, calling up on the radio, I've got him in my sights. I got him in my sights. He could see he had an AR-15 running for – he wouldn't take the fucking shot.
Yeah, we got one.
When you got a gun, they think different. It slows down that buck mentality.
We got one more topic we got to get to tonight, y'all. We're about at the end of the show. And that's the fact that the new city hall needs an additional $3 million to be completed. So that will make the grand total $230.5 million to reach completion. In my opinion, they need to scrap this and start over. In my opinion, stay where you're at. And in my opinion, try to sell that building to whoever is the next sucker who will take it, because this is getting crazy. Basically, they're saying 5 main factors are pushing the cost increase. Allegedly, they're saying the federal floodway requirements added scope, staff, maintenance, and inflation as a reason. The building was supposed to open.
Let me tell you something.
Okay, no, let me finish. Oh, I believe that. Let me finish. The building was supposed to open later this year, but they pushed it back to 2024 due to an alleged permit needed from the U.S. Army of Corps of Engineers. And they alleged the TRWD informed the Alethean group and the city that the construction site is sitting on a federal floodway. So basically, $7.8 million increase in construction costs because of the floodway requirements. Okay, somebody's got some noise. They're also saying to meet federal requirements for the land, they're saying the building needs waterproofing and structural and grade changes. So this is the numbers that y'all, they didn't came up with $50 million with this. They're saying inflation has added an additional $13 million. Maintenance of the towers has added an additional $12 million. Miscellaneous additions to the plan, $9 million. Increased capacity for the staff, another almost $8 million. And then the federal floodway, $7,600,000. Y'all, this is crazy. That's unacceptable. And whoever gave us the initial numbers and got that far wrong, they should be fired. If you made a $50 million mistake on your job, they would fire you.
Yep.
Period.
It could.
Yeah.
But see, the thing about it is, all that, what you talking about, they knew that from the beginning, Kerry.
No, I don't think so.
My daddy is a whole engineer and worked for the state. I've been around that stuff long enough, doing underfloor plumbing. All that stuff, the site plan and all that stuff, All that's done in the beginning, Kerry. You don't wait till the back end to come with that shit. You do all that at the beginning.
Somebody need to be fired. It's just a simple. I mean, how do you come back with a straight face and say I need an additional $50 million? Where do you do that at? This building is not worth it.
Now hear what I see.
They can build a building.
Now hear what I see, Kerry.
What?
Kerry, all that, before they went off on it, they going to ask, you got to have a certificate of occupancy. Mm-hmm. With that, the inspector's going to go in and say, hey, they're going to go through that thing from the root to the tooth. All that information they talking about, they had that at the beginning when they was going to say, hey, we're going to move to this building. So when the inspectors came in and say and showed them, hey, y'all need this, 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 and this to bring this up to code, they knew that's done at the beginning, not the ass end.
How long has this building been vacant? And why did the last people leave?
See that part there? Mm-hmm. See what I'm saying? What I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Pure One went out. They went out of business. Pure One. It was Pure One. They went out of business. They bankrupt.
Okay.
Didn't it used to be Cash America?
Yeah, it used to be Pure One.
Cash America.
Pure One.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pure One went bankrupt.
Yeah.
But they lied to.
You know what? I say, in my opinion, that this needs to come to a vote before the people, and the people need to decide. Because you know what? You could build a building to your specifications cheaper than you can rehabilitate. I mean, you can rehab this building. So to me, this should be a foregone conclusion that this is not going to happen after it's a vote, you know, before the people, because this makes no sense. This isn't financially responsible for the future to come. No, this makes no sense.
What I'm saying is they're lying.
Yeah,
they are liars, Kerry. That's bullshit for them to get some more money at the cookie job.
Yeah.
Well,
CEO, bro. I'm in this game. Construction technology, that's part of my degree. My dad is an engineer. That shit
well,
they talking about, you do that shit at the beginning before they'll let you know. It's just like YMLA was supposed to go behind Dumbo. When they excavated their land, that ground is still contaminated. Okay, you do abatement tests. You do all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You do all that stuff. You get all that reports at the beginning.
I don't know if the leadership downtown realizes this is a black eye to you all asking for reelection. I mean, why would we vote for people who make $50 million in the state? That makes no sense. Who puts somebody back in office who makes $50 million a day? I mean, that's scary by itself, because if you make a $50 million mistake, then you'll make another, you know, $60 million.
It ain't no mistake.
A city inspector. So what does that mean? He's not going to go against his job.
They can't hide it from us, though. That's what I'm saying. We can pull the paperwork from planning or somewhere.
I think scrap the whole building.
We can see this from the beginning. But the information they're talking about, waterproof and all that, they knew that from day one.
But they got them reports. You could build a building for a whole lot less than it's going to take. The $230 million, that's ridiculous. So
I mean, that's true. That's absolutely true, because a lot of times dealing with houses, it's cheaper to knock that old house down to bring it up to code. And they'll do that every day of the week. You know what I'm saying? And they notice what I'm saying. They telling us a hot-ass lie.
But it's always going to be a problem with it being on the a federal floodway and all that. It's just way too much. So, y'all, in my opinion,
Jerry,
this needs to go to court.
It just become a federal floodway when they said it. It's been
like
that.
Why did they catch that before? Whose idea was it to buy this building? Yeah. I mean, it just, yeah. Who owned it before? Who owned it before? Did somebody make some money off of it? This just is just like a whole, like, hot mess. Yeah, we got to get ready to get out of here. Huh?
That's all Cook's realm right there.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, if we got to sit down and make a $30 mistake, that's crazy. That's crazy.
I guess Turner, construction. It's tied to the contract. We got the contract.
Wow. Y'all, we got to get ready to get out of here. We've gone over time. Listen, y'all, thank y'all for tuning in tonight as we covered hot topics. If they've been talking about it in the headlines, y'all, we were talking about it tonight. So if you did not catch the original show, check it out on the, if you didn't catch us live, rather, catch us on the replay. Listen, y'all, we're talking about the topics that are most important to you. Tell a friend, tell a neighbor, or tell a coworker to check out the show. We're on each and every Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. If you have an idea for advertising, doing it right here on Let's Talk Fort Worth. If you have a product, a service, a campaign, a nonprofit, we love to talk about advertising with you right here on Let's Talk Fort Worth. You can drop us a line at letstalkfortworth@aol.com. That's letstalkfortworth@aol.com. We are absolutely on this upcoming election, and we will not get off of it until we find out who's going to be declared the winners and the losers on May 6th. Also, listen, consider donating to the show. We want to take this to the absolute next level. We want boots on the ground to come out to you and cover your stories. We want new equipment because we want to bring the best production possible. So if you would consider donating to Let's Talk Fort Worth so we can take this thing all the way to the next level. Listen, y'all, also follow us on Facebook. We have a Facebook page, Let's Talk Fort Worth, where we cover all of these topics on a daily basis. So with that said, until next Friday, good night.